Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. My name is Jason Lewis, and you're listening to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I want to thank you for joining us today for the show that is shaping the way that the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Before we introduce today's guest, I want to be sure that we thank our sponsor, OneCause. OneCause is the leader in online, mobile, and virtual fundraising software. OneCause supports over 6,000 nonprofits to reach more and raise more with innovative solutions. You can visit their virtual fundraising resource center at www.onecause.com. I would also like to tell you about Responsive's 12-month recovery plan that we've been collaborating on for the last several weeks with several of our most trusted colleagues in the fundraising space. We are very grateful to Jennifer Harris, Andrew Olson, Teresa Lee, as well as our friends at OneCause and iWave for contributing to this plan. This resource is available to you for free. All you have to do is go to our website at www.responsivefundraising.com/recovery plan and download it. I will also be sure to include a link in the show notes. Now let's introduce today's guest. Hi, podcast listeners. I am delighted to be having this conversation today. I don't have one. I have two guests. Christina and Melissa are with me today, and we're going to talk about this big question of what do we do with events? Do we keep them on the calendar? Do we keep them scheduled? Do we go totally virtual? I really don't have an answer. So I've enlisted the help of two experts, one from OneCause, and Christina Taylor also is going to join us. So before we tackle that big question, Melissa and Christina, we'll start with you. Why don't the two of you introduce yourselves?
Wonderful. Thank you, Jason. My name is Christina Taylor. I own a firm called TaylorMade Experience. We've been around for about 13 years, and we focus on fundraising and events, typically large scale, which are not happening right now in person, for nonprofit organizations and corporations. So we are helping our clients pivot and would love to share our thoughts.
And I am Melissa Merriam. I'm the Senior Director of Consulting and Customer Education at OneCause. I've been with OneCause for almost 10 years, coming up this year. And we love partnering with our customers, obviously help them to pivot as well, along with Christina, into mostly virtual fundraising. And we are trying to help people make decisions right now about fall fundraising events. So I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So before we kind of tackle the question of what do we do about the fall and what do we do about 2021, I'm really just interested in hearing what for the two of you who obviously know fundraising and know special events, what is like the last 6 months or, you know, what's the last, like, what's it been, 5 months? What does the last 5 months look like for the two of you?
You want me to start? Okay.
Go ahead, Melissa.
Okay. So I think for us, obviously the date sticks out in my mind. It was around March 14th when we started to have our phones ring off the hook with people saying, my state has shut down. I cannot have my event and it's in a week or 2 weeks. Those were the initial calls we got. So we immediately started looking through all of our resources, tweaking our consulting practices. The job of my team, we have a team of 40 consultants located all across the country that help our customers. We've helped over time somewhere between 8 and 10,000 customers since we first started consulting into having successful events, right? Helping them use our software and then also helping them just create best practices around how they want to steward their donors and how they want to execute on their events and have flawless events. So tweaking a lot of that to go entirely virtual obviously was a challenge, but it was actually really, really educational. And I think we saw a lot of positives come out of this period in time, globally, of course, and then also just in the fundraising industry. It helped people move beyond some ideas that they may have had or preconceived notions that maybe once they executed their virtual events, they realized they really could do virtual fundraising.
Yeah. And I'll add to that for sure. I think initially everyone was paralyzed. We had most of our clients calling saying, what should we do? We really didn't have much recommendation beyond what we were hearing from the CDC and following guidelines of events. So most things were either kind of in limbo or they were moving to the fall from the spring, or we were talking about potentially canceling completely and going to next year, to 2021. I think our main recommendation was we do have to figure out quickly how to pivot and do something this year because nonprofits, a lot of them, you know, live off of the income that they bring in from their events and fundraising. And so we didn't want them to see any of them fail. And so we pivoted quickly. I joke with my team that I feel like we've been back in college or back in startup mode. We've been cramming. And so now I feel like we're finally, you know, 4 months, 5 months in, we have finally come to this level set field where we now are seeing people comfortable with the new landscape, comfortable putting events on in a virtual format, and comfortable moving forward with an ask. I think the main thing from a fundraising perspective, a lot of our clients who weren't in the social service, direct service market, where they weren't a food bank or a COVID response organization, they were feeling like they didn't want to sound tone deaf when they went out to ask their donors for support. And I think that now that we're all in it, and we've been in it for a while, people are starting to emerge and become more comfortable making those asks that are so vital to these organizations.
Wow, Christina, you make a really good point on two different things. Number one, I think what our role was as professionals in the beginning was to really give people the confidence to ask, right? The confidence to fundraise. So that came from a variety of different things, talking through like economics and talking through, you know, what is a fundraiser's job, right? Is there, we had a donor actually, a donor say to one of our customers who then shared the story with us, it's not your job to decide if someone is able to fundraise. It's only your job, or to donate, excuse me. It's only your job to ask them.
Right.
So I felt like that was like really a simple statement, but also really thought-provoking, because if the job of a fundraiser is simply to ask for the funds and not judge ability to give or things like that in these sorts of situations, right? These once, well, mm-hmm. hopefully once in a lifetime situations, or new situations that come around, then that makes decision-making a lot easier, right? Mm-hmm. The other thing you said was for those folks that don't have like that very visible cause, like if we do not get donations, there will be people that will go hungry, or if we cannot provide this service, then this will happen, right? A little bit more esoteric causes or causes that don't necessarily resonate with people as easily. And being able to sit with customers and give them creative ideas about how to reach out. Those that weren't comfortable with social media or didn't have an active social media presence, they really had to get that going, right? If you weren't communicating with your donors on a regular basis, either via social media or email or, you know, any other variety of ways, then it was going to be really tough for you to try and connect with them in a virtual manner.
Yeah. So I remember actually coincidentally, and I didn't know this when we invited her to be our guest, we had a one cause client who happens to be a Boston organization who actually turned their event around like instantaneous, you know, as soon as I think it was, you know, March 13th.
It was a couple weeks. I think you're talking about the symphony, maybe?
Yeah, the symphony. Yes, yes.
Okay.
So, yeah. So we had that group on as a guest because she's connected to one of our colleagues here on the team at Responsive, and she's telling the story. And like I said, coincidentally, we didn't know that they were a one cause client. But what was so surprising there was just how the outcomes were so much more upbeat and positive, and she had outcomes that she would not have anticipated had she done the event in person. I mean, she had, she engaged donors that she would not have expected to show up at that event. She pulled together, you know, a team very quickly And have the two of you heard those kind of stories elsewhere where the necessity and the momentum and the demand for, like, we've got to turn this around and pivot in a really quick direction has just yielded really positive results?
Yeah, that's what we're hearing actually across the market. I mean, we have already conducted a little bit more than a handful of virtual events for clients that were supposed to be happening in the spring. And for the most part, we are seeing that the fundraising is actually producing the same, if not more, results than last year. The positive for the nonprofit, while it pains me for my industry, I come from the hotel background, the positive is that the cost is with the events are associated during this time are less because they're not paying for the venue to host their dinner or their gala. They're not paying for the catering or the food and beverage. And so while that's not a positive, in my opinion, but it is working for right now. And the nonprofits are seeing, because of those reduced costs, they are able to fundraise at a higher scale. So we're definitely seeing the positive. I don't think we've had one event yet, nor do we have one teeing up for the fall that is showing any sign of a decline.
Yeah, we've had similar experiences. Many customers have been more successful doing virtual fundraising. They've seen higher profits due to the reasons that Christina pointed out, you know, not having to pay for venues and different vendors, florists, decor, things like that. I think the other thing that's happening that's sort of, we still don't know the effects of, but obviously the fundraising calendar is also able to move. Whereas with live events, there's a distinct event season that happens from about February to May, and then again from September to November, early November, I should say. We're seeing that morph, right? Christina mentioned a lot of her customers moving from spring are now holding their events now, because if you're in Arizona or where I am here in the southeast, then there's not that worry about, like, it's going to be too hot to have an event, right? Now it's more like, what day of the week should we have our event? What makes most sense now that things have started to open up a little bit in some areas? I think the positive results cannot be overstated. And really getting your messaging together, I think, is one very important factor. Mm-hmm. You know, if there are so many resources now to hire social media people to help you, consider investing a little bit into a social media manager that can help with some really on-target messaging, getting your ideas out there, getting your mission out there, and then, of course, getting your event details out there. And then last, obviously, you need to start researching software. I know there are a lot of people that have pivoted and been very happy with their results, but I also know there are probably still people frozen in fear and indecision because they're not used to this atmosphere. So definitely a need to explore those new horizons and look for resources in different places than you might have before with live events.
So let's just imagine that the three of us, as well as that, let's say there's a 2-3 year young fundraiser who's sitting in the room with us, and he or she is asking the question, okay, what do I do with this event, say, that's scheduled for October 15th? What's the advice that we're giving him or her as we sit over a cup of coffee and sort of answer the questions? What are the questions maybe that we're asking them first? And then maybe what's the advice we're giving them?
Do you want me to go, Melissa?
Sure. Yeah, you go first. This is you have lots of experience with this. Go for it.
So I would say one thing that you just touched on, Melissa, in your previous comment about messaging. I think, you know, it's almost like I was saying about even my firm. It's like going back to the basics and going back to the beginning and really figuring out what your messaging is and how you're going to tie your work to what's happening right now. You know, everyone has been affected by COVID. In some way, or shape, or form. Others, of course, more than some. But having said that, every organization can look to how they're messaging their response to this time, how they're helping their constituents, what they're doing right now. And I think that resonates with people more than anything. So having said that, looking at the programs of the organization, really looking at what that messaging looks like, how they're going to make the ask. You know, we had some people, I think, like you had said, Melissa, who were just frozen and they didn't know what to do. And I said, look, just tell people that. Tell people that you are unsure and you don't want to sound tone deaf about making your ask, but that you know that because of the work that you do, that it's going to be that it's necessary for the organization. And I think being upfront in that nature is very real right now, and it will resonate with people. And then I think taking action right after that, you know, developing what that plan is from that messaging and how you're going to execute it and how you're going to make yourself stand out. You know, I've also said to a lot of our clients that right now, we're seeing a lot of noise in the virtual space, just like how you would see in the spring and the fall, at least in the DC market. We'd have 5 galas a week, and you'd always have to be competing for folks to come to your event. So just like how it is in person, people are having to compete for people to come to their events online. And so how do you stand out to people in that time? And so we've been directing our clients to really dive into what will their constituents and donors want to see. You know, is there a VIP in their industry that they want to hear from, that they can call upon during this time? Is there a celebrity that they have a connection to, whether it be local or national, that they can call upon to have be part of the event? And what's nice about right now is that people don't have to fly anywhere or be anywhere. You're not asking for a celebrity to come from LA to DC or LA to New York. You're asking them to basically get online for maybe 5-10 minutes, or if worst case scenario is you're asking them to send you a video, a 3-minute video welcoming people to the event, or doing some sort of, you know, talk that they can record that you can put in your program virtually online. And we've seen quite a bit of success in that regard. And I think that's what is going to be the pull to keep people engaged and excited about the events.
You make such a good point about getting VIP celebrities, you know, well-known business people that are related to that charity. I think that is such a key point. You know, a lot of the celebrities are not able to work either. So, you know, I'm sure they're looking to keep their skills sharp, get their on-camera skills, you know, kept strong. And there's definitely those opportunities there. I think that's a really good point. The other thing I would say, and I feel like I keep harping on messaging, but we have found it's really the determiner if someone is wildly successful or not is really in their messaging, both pre-event and around event day. One of the resources that I always lean on, I've watched this probably dozens of times, is Dan Pallotta's TED Talk, which is The Way We Think About Charity is Dead Wrong. And it refers a lot to sort of, there are some topics that don't necessarily relate, but one of the things he points out is how if fundraisers look at their fundraising in the same way that businesses looked at their marketing and used some similar concepts, that they could 10x their revenue. So I definitely highly recommend this for every fundraiser, any board member. It's got so many nuggets of information, so many valuable nuggets of information. And along those lines, if you're looking to expand your social media reach or expand your messaging, start looking at some companies on Twitter, on Facebook, on, you know, any other social media platforms. Look at video, right? We know there's lots of data out there about what makes messaging successful. So having video, having images, you don't just put a text post, right? It amps up engagement 30 or 40% with images. So definitely that. And then, you know, obviously going back to what can you bring, how can you bring value to your donors in a virtual world? Like you pointed out, Christina, the celebrity ideas. Another idea that's a great idea, you know, there are people that, some people that have suffered from a loss of work, employment, things like that. Think about how can you connect business people and provide networking opportunities might be another avenue to explore.
So, Hey, Christina, you alluded to this, the idea of noise. What if the question is like, can we experiment? What if the idea is like, can we experiment with like timing of an event, like something totally shooting off the, you know, shooting from the hip here and thinking when could be like the most experimental time? What if we were like hosting like a Sunday brunch sort of formatted event? Would either of you dare to experiment with something like that?
Absolutely.
I definitely think any event can be taken virtual. I think it's really knowing and for the organizations that we've worked with for many years, and Melissa, you probably feel this way too about your clients. We know the donors, we know the people who are attending, and we can really give good sound advice. When I talk to organizations now that are new to us, that are asking us to help them take their event virtual or strategize, like you were saying, Melissa, in the social space, which we do as well, I've been telling them, you know, we can't really give you a good gauge without knowing who your donors are. But if they look at, you know, their donors and are they people that, you know, would be willing to log into a virtual event, you know, if their donors, I'm just going to make this up for conversation's sake, if their donors are all, you know, family, all of their owners, let's say, have children between the ages of, you know, 3 and 8. Does it make sense right now during this time to have a Friday evening 7 o'clock dinner? Maybe not, because everyone's home and they're exhausted from the week because they're homeschooling everyone. Right. So maybe they want to pivot to a weekday daytime event. Maybe they want to make it a more family friendly weekend event. You know, they really need to look at who their donors are and who they're wanting to attract to the event and make the decision for that. But I would say any event really can be pivoted to the virtual space and strategizing, you know, what that run of show that's tight and concise looks like. The other thing I will just add real quick is I would not take your event and just plop it online. So events that are happening, that were happening in person before, do not translate exactly to the virtual space. And what I mean by that is that, you know, an event where you're coming to a reception for an hour, you're sitting down for a dinner program, the program's 90 minutes, there's a dessert reception afterwards, you know, getting someone to pay attention for 2 hours, 3 hours online is virtually impossible. I'd love to talk to someone who's done that, but I think the attention span of most people is not that long. We are recommending 45 minutes to an hour maximum for the entire event. So you do have to look at where you can cut, how you can streamline and make the event as tight as possible to keep people's attention span.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. One of the things we've been advising is if you are going to do a silent auction, and I would like to touch on that here in just a minute, because there's been a lot of questions about procurement and things like that we may be able to answer. But if you are doing a silent auction or doing any sort of fixed price items, raffles, or any other type of fixed price opportunity, those you can put online beforehand. So I mentioned before, you know, it's important to have technologies that allow you to do this. You know, obviously we supply something like that, but there's other companies out there and you have to look into them and decide what's the best one for you. But putting your silent on 1 to 2 weeks before, this has been kind of what we've arrived at as a good formula, 1 to 2 weeks before for silent auction and fixed price items, and perhaps a passive donation, maybe for those folks that can't attend that night. There's a donation package open with a little bit of messaging. Perhaps there's a video that they can watch. And then on event day, or what we've been calling like finale day, absolutely agree with Christina, somewhere between 30 and 60 minutes, real focused, real message, mission oriented, and kind of get in and get out and make sure you're sharing your mission and then doing your live appeal on that day, perhaps finishing up the silent auction with like a really attentive close, and then pulling your raffle winners or fixed price winners if you are using those components.
Yeah, you know, Melissa, you've got me thinking that. So I've been fundraising for 20 plus years, perhaps like the two of you have. And it would seem like now could be a very creative time So in addition to experimenting, now would be a really a time for us. I have met event planners that were very creative, and I have met event planners that were not creative at all. And somehow or another, both groups, both categories sometimes manage to raise a whole heck of a lot of money. But I know that the creativity, like for instance, our local ballpark. So obviously they're not a nonprofit, but our local ballpark for COVID reasons is closed down. And so they are hosting Friday night movie nights where we go and we watch. And I took my daughter to watch the Kevin Costner film, The Field of Dreams.
Yeah.
And it's just a creative use of space that can't be used for the traditional purposes. And this kind of gets back to one of your comments about the idea of maybe it doesn't sort of fit. No, a 3-hour event's not going to go online. And I guess the question is it even going to, can we get away with, is there something that we can do in this time space that isn't virtual? Like, what can we do that isn't, maybe it's more like a campaign or something. There's other channels that don't necessarily have to be a virtual platform, right?
Yeah. And I can speak to a specific client example. We had one client decide, and like I said earlier in the conversation, I would say 90% of our clients decided to move forward with some sort of virtual event. The 10% that didn't basically makes up about three or four of our clients. One of them decided that the large scale, they normally have over 1,000 people. It's a huge networking event. They just could not wrap their heads around how to really make that work in a virtual space. They decided to go ahead and look at doing it next year. Now, having said that, you know, will they have to look at potentially virtual even next April? Maybe. So it's still on the table. The other event, though, that decided not to just forego an event this year did decide just to do a campaign and specifically look at the program work that they had left for the rest of 2020, what that was going to be needed for funding, and what funding was going to be needed, and engage their board and their committee that typically would work on their event to basically do a specific ask to folks to support those programmatic needs they have for the end of the year. And so it was just an all hands on deck. We helped from a fundraising perspective, make calls, talk with their board, engage them, ask them to look through their LinkedIn networks and ask other people within their network that had similar desires to work with organizations like theirs to donate. And so we did a full campaign for that. And it was also successful. But I do think that, you know, even though we are in a pandemic, there is still the need for there to be something for folks to attend, whether it be the event or, you know, something that they're getting from a benefit perspective, especially when you're looking at corporate sponsors. So giving them some sort of exposure, you know, their logo on the lower third of the screen, their, you know, their mention in all the social. I think that still is beneficial to people, even though people are a little bit more understanding nowadays during this difficult time.
Yeah. What Christina is alluding to is a peer-to-peer type campaign, mm-hmm. What we call an ambassador fundraising campaign, which is basically taking your most ardent supporters, which could be, you know, big donors, board members, committee members, perhaps even employees. And then she also mentioned corporate sponsors. You could also partner with a corporation and ask them to do an ambassador fundraising campaign for you. So these are all peer-to-peer fundraising ideas. We do provide a peer-to-peer software platform that's amazing, but there's all sorts. You know, you have this online auction and the appeal that happens on finale day, you know, mission moment, live appeal, virtual peer-to-peer fundraising ambassador campaigns. You could also include some type of challenge and DIY campaigns, which actually allows people to open up their own campaigns that spin off of your main campaign. So they can do special events with small groups, perhaps. They can do a whole bunch of different types of activities. You could do virtual conferences that are more business oriented. So perhaps there are speakers, you know, think about your own little mini TEDx type convention, and then publicize those sessions for people. Online donations, obviously, is one that many nonprofits are already doing. And then another thing that's been really big right now are these virtual concerts. I'm actually, in my personal life, we're going to see the Avett Brothers at a drive-in movie theater, and they're doing a concert. So, you know, you could adapt that idea. So there's really a lot of opportunities. Definitely getting together with someone like Christina or one of our employees, and just really mulling over what are the different opportunities is definitely a good first step, for any nonprofit looking to expand their fundraising. And then one last thought, I think, you know, we use the word pivot and, you know, it kind of, I think everybody's sick of the word pivot right now. Right. But I think it has a little bit of a negative connotation. What I really like to think about is an expansion. So you can expand your fundraising in ways that you'd never really thought of, because maybe you thought, oh, my demographic is, you know, I have an older demographic. We have, you know, a lot of older folks that aren't comfortable with online fundraising. Well, guess what? You've got to figure out how to get those people comfortable with online fundraising, right? We have somebody right now that we're working with that said, I'm having a volunteer go to this very large donor's house. She's 93 years old, but is a very generous donor, and she wants to participate, and she just needs some help getting online. So they're doing that with masks on, and you know, this volunteer or employee is going to go and help her get online. So, you know, just wanted to put that out there.
I think some of the feedback that I heard from the woman who was on the podcast that was sharing with me about what they did at the Symphony in Boston is, so anybody who listens to the podcast knows that I'm always about sort of forecasting what fundraising is going to look in the future. But I'm also always thinking about sort of what does mastery look like for the fundraising professional and like this young professional that we're talking, we're sort of imagining ourselves sitting around the table with. And I kind of wonder if maybe what we're talking about that we've all experienced for the last 6 months, and we'll sort of wrap up on this question, but is the last 6 months really like graduate school? And are we not really pivoting, but are we just learning new skills? Like, I don't know that we have to. So let's say, you know, next fall, you know, like a year from now, next, you know, 2021, we actually put the galas and golf tournaments back on the schedule. But are there things that we're going to like want to hold on to and actually keep on the calendar that are going to be virtually, you know, oriented towards sort of a virtual format? And maybe we're just like learning new skills. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. Like I said, I feel like we're back cramming in college to learn. And we've been doing virtual for a long time because even working, you know, Melissa, with One Cause, I mean, we see that some of the work that we do is online, which is really the virtual space. And then some of the work we do is in person. And what you were saying, Jason, about looking at what the landscape looks like later when we can come all back together. I just did a webinar last week about hybrid events. And I think that will be a new thing coming into the early part of 2021, where there are some areas that are allowing some level of group back together. Some people may be comfortable with that, but some people are not going to be. So giving people an option to come in person or come online, I think is obviously a way to capture the most attendees. But I do think there will be some events in the future that will maybe stay virtual. We do an awards program that typically happens in May. And usually we will have about 300 people attend the event. We usually have about 600 RSVPs. It is a free program featuring event for our nonprofit client. And because of that big drop off in person, it was beneficial for us to take it online because we could open up we could spread the word far and wide and have more people attend in a virtual space. So for this year's event, when we took it virtual, we had over 1,000 people RSVP, over 800 people log in online. So the attrition rate was much lower in the virtual space than it is in person. And we were able to stream it on YouTube and on Facebook, and we were able to get over 5,000 views for that event. So there are some big benefits to having a virtual version of your event. And I think that's what we'll see that will remain.
Yeah. I totally agree with Christina. We also are seeing a huge interest in hybrid events, and we are producing content related to virtual and hybrid type events where you have a small group in a venue and a group outside, you know, participating virtually. We are also enhancing our products so that we can answer some of these needs for our customers. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on. I would recommend that everybody go to our website at onecause.com for our resource center. If you click on resources, you'll see we have tons and tons of virtual content. Our marketing team has done a smash up job with that. As it relates to your question, I think one of the biggest mindsets that we need right now for both nonprofit fundraisers and donors also is a growth mindset. Right? If you don't have a growth mindset and you don't see the possibilities that exist out there, even if they haven't existed in the past, then it will be very hard for you to transition to this new idea of perhaps creating a year-round fundraising calendar. Maybe at some point when, you know, pandemic goes away, there's a vaccine, you know, people feel more comfortable being in large groups. Maybe you'll still have that large event that happens in person, but maybe you'll also have a hybrid approach. Or maybe you'll say, you know what, we're going to do a fundraising event every quarter, and three of them are going to be virtual and one will be in person. So I hope what this does is really opens up a lot of people's eyes to the fact that you can fundraise virtually, that having that growth mindset and that open mind about how do we reach out to people, how do we help the people that aren't as tech savvy as you know, they maybe need to be, and how do we get people where we need them to be so they can see our messaging and hear our mission and, you know, hopefully hop on the train and give.
Yeah. So this has been a very upbeat conversation, and I've been, I have never been a big cheerleader for special events, but since that conversation that we had with the Boston Symphony Group and getting my head wrapped around virtual events, I have been thinking, wow, this is maybe this is a growth spurt, and thinking very positively. So Melissa and Christina, if somebody's listening, say it's that experienced fundraiser or the, you know, inexperienced fundraiser that we were talking to earlier, or maybe if it's somebody who's been around and they're just looking for some encouragement, how would you suggest that they reach out to you?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Christina.
The best way to reach us is by way of our website, tailormadeexperience.com. We also have a lot of blog posts in regards to some of the topics we've talked about today. We did some great posts in regard to peer-to-peer fundraising, and one of our staff members actually participated in an event for one of our clients and documented her the way that she did it with her peers. So we have some good content there. We're also on LinkedIn, TaylorMade Experience LLC, and we're happy to be helpful in any way we can.
Yeah. And I mentioned the website, onecause.com. If you click on resources at the top, that's where you'll see all of our blogs, our guides and ebooks. We have webinars pretty much almost weekly. So you can sign up for those. If you can't attend, we'll send you the recording. And then if anyone would like to connect with me personally on LinkedIn, my name is Melissa Merriam, like the dictionary. Sometimes that's an outdated reference, but it's M-E-R-R-I-A-M. And I look forward to talking to everybody. So,
hey, this has been a lot of fun, a great way to kick off my day. And I wish you, I hope that you have a wonderful, but to both of you, I hope you have a wonderful afternoon. And to the rest of our guests, thank you for chiming in. Melissa and Christina, you're always welcome back. All you've got to do is have a big idea or bold opinion, and we'll get you back on here. Thank you.
Thanks, Jason.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.